Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Donald Trump is expected to name Florida Senator Marco Rubio as his Secretary of State. That's according to US media reports, various sources. Meanwhile, the judge in Donald Trump's Manhattan criminal hush money case has postponed deciding on whether to throw out the president-elect's conviction on presidential immunity grounds, whether to overthrow the conviction he already has. For reaction to developments in the second Trump presidency, I'm joined now by Greg Swenson. He's a chairman of Republicans Overseas UK, and also by Richard Painter, former chief White House ethics lawyer in the George W. Bush administration. You're both very welcome to the programme. And I might come to you, Richard Painter, first of all, because I haven't spoken with you since, and we spoke pre-election, but what is your reaction now post-election? You didn't foresee this happening, did you? You didn't predict it anyway, for sure.
Well, this was predicted to be a very close election, and it turned out to not be so close. There is clearly a mandate for the Republican policy agenda. We see that with the Republicans gaining control of both houses of Congress and President Trump being reelected now as our 47th president. Mm-hmm. I believe there continues to be skepticism about President Trump's conduct in office during his first term, and hope from the voters that during his second term he can focus on the policy agenda that put him into office that won the election.
Well, if there is skepticism, the voters didn't show it too much, because he romped home, really. And now he's appointing an awful lot of Trump loyalists, people who won't cause him much challenge or adversary in terms of putting his policies into place.
This is true. This team, the foreign policy team that's been named, is actually considerably stronger than the foreign policy team that he brought in 2017. And while they are Trump loyalists, they are predominantly loyal to his policies. And are focusing on strengthening the American position vis-a-vis China and other aspects of the foreign policy agenda of the Trump administration, rather than people who got embroiled in his personal and his legal struggles. We have yet to see who's going to be in charge of the Justice Department, certain other positions, but this is certainly an encouraging sign that we appear to have a strong foreign policy team. In the United Nations, the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, and our national security, new national security advisor, Mike Walls, of course, Lisa Stefanik, who worked with me in the White House, in the Bush White House. She's going to be at the United Nations. So that's what we know so far.
How do you think Marco Rubio, if he is to be appointed Secretary of State, how do you think he'll do in that role? Because he's been, some analysts, some commentators have pointed out that of the options Donald Trump had, he was the most hawkish.
Well, he is, but I think this was a quite hawkish policy was on the agenda, particularly with respect to China, but also taking a firm stand in support of Israel in the Middle East. But the Trump agenda also is not to increase our military footprint abroad, and certainly not to have troops on the ground.
Trouble for Ukraine, Richard.
Well, that is an issue that there's going to need to be a negotiated resolution of that war, which has been going on now for 2 years. But certainly if the Trump administration abandons Ukraine and there's a slaughter in Ukraine by the Russian forces, that's going to reflect very, very badly on the United States. So this situation has to be handled carefully to make sure that Vladimir Putin is not overreaching in whatever demands he makes of Ukraine to come to a ceasefire.
Mm-hmm. And his NATO allies are waiting and wondering what will happen in that regard as well. Can I ask you, before I turn to Greg Swenson, who's with us as well, but can I ask you, Richard Painter, since you are the former chief White House ethics lawyer with the George W. Bush administration, we were awaiting to see what the judge in New York would do today in whether to overthrow Donald Trump's conviction in the hush money case, criminal conviction. isn't it a very fine line between losing and winning? If he lost this election, you'd have sentencing of that conviction, further investigations and maybe more lawsuits. Now investigations are being wound down and it's likely that the criminal conviction will be overturned.
Well, the federal criminal cases, I think, are almost certainly going to be dismissed. And the Georgia case as well, involving the conduct in January 6th of 2021. And that, you know, the voters who voted for Donald Trump to be our next president, and he's going to control the Justice Department, and I think that's what's going to happen. The New York case is different. That involves personal capacity conduct. It's really hard to assert immunity there. It was conduct during a campaign and then trying to cover up the payoff to Stormy Daniels. And I have to say, it's not the most serious criminal conviction that he could have been exposed to. It's not going to result in prison time. I would think it would result in probation. But it's a little hard to argue that the immunity decision of the U.S. Supreme Court would apply there when the Supreme Court is very, very clear that personal capacity conduct of the president can be prosecuted. So we'll see what happens there in New York, but I don't think it's going to significantly impact his ability to perform his duties as president.
Really briefly, Richard, it would be hard to see Judge Merchan in New York sentencing a president of the U.S.
Well, you know, if he tried to sentence him to a prison term or something like that, well, it would interfere with his official duties. I think that a federal court would certainly rule that out of the question. But I think it's very important, and the Supreme Court of the United States made it very clear in Trump versus the United States that a Trump, their president, is can be charged for personal conduct, and if he committed the offense and has to pay a fine and go on probation or something like that, then so be it. I don't think that's going to be something that's going to interfere with the presidency. And other countries have held former presidents and others accountable. France has had two presidents who have been found guilty of criminal charges. And I think it's very important to make sure that the principle is clear, that no person is above the law.
Okay, Richard Painter, thank you very much indeed. I'm joined, as I say, as well by Greg Swenson, who's chairman of Republicans Overseas UK. Greg, you're very welcome to the programme.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's stay in New York, will we, for a second, and talk about that case. So we were expecting a decision from the judge in New York as to whether he would overturn the conviction that Donald Trump has at the moment and whether he would continue in sentence or if he'd sentence him. That's been delayed now, postponed until later in the month. What do you think he will do in that situation?
I wouldn't put anything past this particular judge. I mean, he's really shown, you know, a great degree of obvious distaste, dislike, or even hatred for President Trump. It doesn't make him look good. I think maybe postponing it is maybe it's wise to let the dust settle a little bit from the election, but also, you know, there's other reasons to dismiss this case, not just the immunity case, because as Richard pointed out, I don't think it's really a great argument to say that in this case he had presidential immunity because it was, you know, a campaign issue. Mm-hmm. But I do think that I think Merchan would be just burying himself further into a hole on this thing because from get-go.
Yeah, but that's not the issue here, is it, Greg? I mean, the issue is that there hasn't been an appeal and the conviction hasn't been overturned. There isn't new evidence to challenge the conviction. As we stand right now, there has been a process and a trial. And the evidence, was a conviction, and that's safe as of now. So what they're challenging is the immunity.
Right, and I think that that's one where I would kick the can down the road. That's what he's done, because I think there's several other reasons to overturn the case, not because of immunity. I think because there's so many holes in the case, because the judge's daughter, you know, was an active Democrat, progressive left. You know, so there's five other reasons to throw this case out.
And I would rather wait for those. Yeah, they didn't work during the trial, but maybe on appeal. Who knows? Can I talk to you about what it means then, all of this, before we talk about the executive that's taking shape? Does it mean Trump is above the law then?
No, and I think back to your last point. I mean, of course they tried to defend Trump in this case. This is totally stacked against him. So this whole argument about weaponization of the justice system actually backfired on the Democrats. So I think they'd probably be best to just let it go, or somehow, you know, it'll get overturned on appeal, of course, if it's outside of New York City. But I do think that it was a mistake, and they'll come back to it. But yeah, this the other is no one's above the law. You know, the argument there, it just lands on deaf ears. I mean, in many ways, we just had the largest jury decision ever, which was, you know, 71 million voters. But I do think that the lawfare was a big part of this election. Now, it obviously helped Trump in the primaries, but it also helped him in the general, because there is this real feeling in the country, not just on the right, that's not something that we think is healthy in the democracy, this you know, going after Trump because he was Trump. So yes, no one's above the law.
Yeah,
but in this case,
there's no suggestion or evidence, is there, that was the case? I mean, there have
plenty of it. Plenty,
yeah, well,
that's
I mean, that's the contention. But there have been cases, and you have to put your faith, don't you, in the criminal justice system in the New York case. A conviction at the end of the day.
And that's because it was completely stacked against him. I mean, remember, Alvin Bragg ran for his office on "I'm going to get Trump." That was his campaign theme. And you had a very difficult jury pool, you know, where 88% had voted for Biden. So, you know, you know, not only Mershon had contributed to Democrat campaigns, so he violated his ethical.
But there was a jury.
Did you ever watch any of that or read anything on that case?
Yeah, I did.
I did
extensively, like so many others. But here's my question to you.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
And this is what sounds amazing. So there is a criminal justice system, and you're tried in a case like that by a jury of your peers. The judge presides over the evidence, and lawyers on both sides, as you know, make the case. And then it is up to the jury to find guilty or not guilty. And a jury of his peers in New York, which is the same for anybody else, found that he was guilty. Now,
really.
The question is this.
Yeah.
The question is this.
Yeah.
And this seems to be what is happening.
Hold on, based on our conversation with Richard Painter,
all of these investigations fall away because he won a Democratic election.
Sure, but let's go back to the Alvin Bragg case. I mean, which was the weakest of them all. I thought there might have been some merits to the documents case, but the Alvin Bragg case was clearly stacked against him. And when you ask about, you know, the jury of his peers, no one else, anybody else not named Donald Trump, would never have faced these charges. So it was weaponized and it was unfair, and the voters realized that. So I think what you'll see is they'll try to dial it down and quietly back away from this case, because it was a mistake from the beginning, and it's really making the judge look bad. It's making the system look bad in New York. And then remember, Hillary Clinton paid a fine for doing almost the exact same thing. She falsified a business record and said that she paid the UK, the Steele dossier case. She paid that through her lawyer. So instead of charging it to the expense which was charged, which was the Steele dossier, she paid her lawyers, and then her lawyers paid the Steele dossier.
Okay.
And then she paid a fine. It wasn't a felony.
Okay.
So she just paid a fine.
And I know Republicans and Democrats are going to agree or disagree or whatever on those points. But the case is done now, so to speak, since he's won the election.
For now.
Can I ask you about the executive that he's putting together now? It's as I mentioned to Richard Painter, it's loyalists, people who are loyal to Trump, or who have been for some in this campaign over the last number of years. So he's likely, more likely anyway, to get his plans implemented. Can I ask you about Marco Rubio in particular? How do you think he'll deal with Ukraine and Russia? And how do you think he'll deal with China and Iran?
Yeah, well, I mean, great question, finally. Marco is very much a China hawk. He's much more hawkish than you know, many of the other people that were being considered. And so you brought up a good point at the beginning of the talk that, you know, he is hawkish. So I don't think it's really just purely, you know, Trump loyalists, although that's important to so everybody's on the same page. And I think that's great that he's doing that. But I do think that Marco is probably one of the more hawkish in the final, you know, the final five under consideration. And that's been the case for years. He's been in the Senate now for 10, 12 years. So I think he will be one of the more hawkish choices, definitely pivoting toward China. I think he was much more aggressive on Ukraine at the beginning in February of 2022. And he's probably dialed that back a bit, as a lot of people have, not just in the U.S., but even here in Europe. You know, you're starting to see some just, you know, more people just asking the right questions.
Do you think that's good for global security?
No, I think what's good for global security is to keep Putin, you know, on his back foot. Now, does that require, you know, a forever war and many more young men and women dying? I hope not. So I think what they're saying now is more, okay, it's not February 22 anymore. The incrementalist support that from Biden, you know, kind of worked to a certain degree, but not really, because he held back on so much stuff. And I think that the threat against Putin will be there from Trump. And, you know, he'll have to abide by whatever the compromise is. This is not surrender.
Okay.
That's what we don't want. You won't get that from Marco Rubio.
I'd say you won't. Thank you very much indeed for your considered and insightful views. Greg Swenson, Chairman of Republicans Overseas UK, and beforehand Richard Painter, former Chief White House Ethics Lawyer in the George W. Bush administration.